we've very briefly discussed Akinichi, and there's a couple observational facts which actually, you know, force upon you that indeed there should be dark energy in our universe. And so really the simplest argument, if you want, is if there is no dark energy, then our universe has to be open universe. But then you can calculate how old that universe is, and it actually turns out that such universe would be younger than some of the observed stars. And of course, that's a big problem that, well, if you have star older than the universe, something is fishy and wrong. But okay, so that was just basically a suspicion that something is going on, you know, on here. But really, the experiment or the observation which convinced people that there is dark energy is this supernova 1A observations. And basically, it's nothing else than you're just comparing the redshift of these objects with their apparent magnitude m. And so there's this formula which I derived yesterday, and you will study more in your homework. But basically, depending on what is the actual content of the universe, of the matter content of the universe, so what is the set of omega I, and you can plot theoretical predictions for all possible omega I's. And then you compare with observation, and that will pick one of these curves here. And so this precisely corresponds to something like 70% of dark energy present in the universe. And because this was, you know, so simple observation and so convincing argument that there must be dark energy, this was awarded Nobel Prize in 2011. There are other, so this is basically like distance versus redshift. So there are other distance measurements. Which I'm not going to describe here, but there's many of them. So, for example, something which is called, and I'm not going to discuss that at all, is baryon acoustic oscillations, which is basically, you know, the oscillations of the primordial plasma when CMB was released, but now these oscillations are sort of stretched into cosmological scales because the universe expanded after that. Okay, and you can still observe, you know, the remnants of these of the oscillations of the primordial plasma when CMB was released. So, and so that gives you some kind of, so this thing here is based on standard candles, and this thing basically gives you like standard length. Okay, so that's something which is known how big it is, and then again you can compare, you know, the distance with how you see it and so on. So again, it's a distant measurement. Okay, so that's the observational evidence, and all of these evidences sort of point out, you know, point towards the fact that there is 70% of dark energy. So let me just briefly mention a couple of problems which we have with dark energy. So cosmological constant problems. And so we already mentioned one, which is saying, well, the energy vacuum should be considering to should be contributing to dark energy, but actually, it's much much bigger the value than the observed dark energy. And so that's called old cosmological constant problem. And then really, you observe rho lambda, which is 10 to minus 29. Centimeter cube, which is, if you use Planck units, is 10 to minus 120 in Planck units. And of course, rho of vacuum in Planck units will be of the order of 1. So you have discrepancy of 10 to power 120, as we discussed already. Okay? So 120 magnitudes bigger theoretical prediction, if you want, than observed. Okay, so this we already discussed. That's the old cosmological constant problem. Now, people wouldn't call it old if there wasn't a new one as well. And so the new one is basically asking, again, what is the, you know, why such value of lambda at this point? And in some sense, why we live close to the fact where lambda is taking over in the history of the universe. Where so if you plot this logarithm of a with respect, if you plot rho versus logarithm of a, so you remember that we had this slope -3/4 matter, but we had a slope of constant. So lambda. Well, our dark energy is constant, and we live somewhere here. And so the question is, why we live, you know, why the value of lambda is so big that we live close to this crossover? And this seems as a trivial question, you know, why not? But actually, there's a deep reason for this question, and it's, again, related to the value of lambda. And if you start tuning this value of lambda, if you change the value of lambda a little bit, actually, so if value of lambda different, then actually you can show, and I'm not going to show it at all, maybe Kendrick will a little bit, that the structure formation completely falls apart. Okay, then structure formation wouldn't work. So, for example, if you have bigger lambda, then really, you know, the galaxies wouldn't start forming because it would start stretching your universe sufficiently quickly, and so the gravitational pull of these local inhomogeneities wouldn't be strong enough, and so these inhomogeneities, these things would be taken apart, and so you wouldn't form any galaxies or nothing, okay? If you increase the value of lambda, so that's, you know, so it's basically the same question, but you know, why lambda is so small. But you know, putting into different consequences. And then finally, I think this is very interesting. So is this cosmological, let me just mention that, non-constant problem. And this is due to our own big Nash Afshordi. So it's Nash for the here at PI, and so it's a paper archive 1504, and now 00012, if you are interested. And so basically what he's saying is, well, people are too much worried about, you know, the expectation value of the vacuum stress energy tensor, which should contribute to lambda, as we discuss in this old problem. And so really the value of this thing can mess with the evolution of homogeneous universe. Okay, so this affects homogeneous universe evolution. But in some sense, you know, it's just a value, it's like a choice of vacuum energy. And you know, there are certain mechanisms how you can get rid of this, you know, zero level of energy. So for example, one of them is supersymmetry, and so if you have supersymmetry, you can maybe tune this value to be much, much smaller than it is at this point. Or, you know, it's just a choice of zero energy. However, if really these vacuum fluctuations contribute to the value of dark energy, there are, of course, high-order correlators of this vacuum T mu nu. So for example, T mu nu, T alpha beta at point Y, this is a two-point function of vacuum tensor. And so these really do not affect what's happening with the homogeneous universe, but they affect what's happening with inhomogeneities. Affect inhomogeneities, and so in some sense, the structure formation is completely broken down because the value of these T mu nu vacuum is so big. So if these, you know, if these correlators are non-trivial, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be non-trivial, then actually, you know, it screws up the whole inhomogeneous part of your course on cosmology, because yeah, and so this is much more severe. So at least that's what is presented in this paper, and I think it's a very interesting idea. So, you know, if you are interested, read it, discuss with Naish, and yeah, you will see. Okay, so I think this is a very interesting problem. Are there any questions towards dark energy? Okay, if no questions, FG, let me start inflation. But before we actually understand what inflation is doing for us, we introduce another quantity, which is called commoving Hubble radius. Commoving Hubble radius. And so you know that if you're in your FRW spacetime, you have basically two scales. So one of them is given by the scale factor A, and the other one is given by your Hubble constant H, in some sense. And then you have the deceleration parameter as well. But yeah, okay, so these two. And so combining these two, you can form a quantity which has units of this commoving coordinate chi. Okay, and so you have hat, which is 1 over AH, and this is 1 over A dot. And this is called commoving Hubble radius, R hat. So now what is interesting about this quantity is that, of course, if the universe is decelerating universe, which means that A double dot is smaller than 0, then if you look at this, it's just 1 over A dot. So then the Hubble radius is actually increasing. So for the decelerating universe, your Hubble radius increases. For accelerated, it's precisely the opposite. So accelerating A double dot is bigger than 0, then the Hubble radius is actually going down. Okay. So now you may be asking, what is the physical meaning of this? And I said, this is basically has units of the commoving coordinate chi. So anyway, so if you want to calculate how much, what is the distance a light can travel in one Hubble time. So this is the distance light can travel in a Hubble time. Okay, so of course that's equal to c times this Hubble time, c is 1. Okay, and so now you require that this is, well, okay, so this is some physical distance, and that's in your FRW spacetime is given by scale factor times the corresponding delta chi. So it's A times delta chi. Okay. So now if you look at what this delta chi here is, you can denote it by R hat. And so this R hat is given by C dH over A, but dH is just 1 over H and C is 1. So it's 1 over AH. Okay, so really it gives you the value of this commoving coordinate delta chi a light can travel in one Hubble time. In other words, it tells you actually about, you know, causally connected regions in your spacetime. So basically it tells you, okay, so if I'm separated this R hat distance, then in a nearby future, meaning in the Hubble time, actually these two regions can communicate. Okay. So tells about causally connected regions at a given time. So now you remember that we discussed, you know, probably the second lecture or whatever, we discussed this horizons thing. And so we introduced the particle horizon. So that was the value of chi beyond which you cannot actually see, because, you know, there's this light cone and it's outside of the light cone. Okay, so just to compare, if chi is bigger than chi particle horizon, you know, never, the regions could never have communicated whatsoever. Never could have communicated. Because it's outside of this light cone, so you remember this is chi equal to zero, this is chi particle horizon, and so if I am somewhere here, I can never communicate with that region there. Okay? If chi is bigger than r hat, that means that we can, these regions cannot communicate now. Of course, now I mean in the next Hubble time. Okay, so that's basically the physical meaning of this R hat. Okay, so it's really, it tells you which regions in your FRW spacetime are sort of causally connected, which can which regions can communicate in nearby future. Okay, so now we know what this commoving Hubble radius is. And it's all very intuitively nice and clear, I hope. So now you can define what an inflation is. So inflation so it's basically, well, so first of all, inflation is not one theory, but it's a framework of theories. So it's not really that you would say, this is my exact theory, and I test it against the predictions. No, it's rather a paradigm that, you know, there must have been some accelerated expansion of the universe. There must have been time when the universe expanded like crazy before the radiation era actually started. Inflation says that before radiation era started, there was a period when universe expanded like crazy. What I mean by that is that it was an accelerated expansion. Okay, so that's basically the paradigm of inflation. And as we shall see, there is many theories which can actually realize this idea more concretely. Okay, but what does it mean is that we have A double dot is bigger than zero, and you can equally write that in terms of this commoving Hubble radius, and we know that r hat must be decreasing, or dr hat over dt is smaller than zero. So now I said that it has to be actually expanding like crazy, meaning that this commoving Hubble radius actually had to shrink like crazy, and like crazy I mean exponentially. Okay, so people define a number of e folds n. N is a number of e folds, and it's defined by e to the n is r hat before the inflation started and when it actually finished. So this is the initial comoving Hubble radius, and this is the final one, and you just define the number of e folds by this formula here. So the initial Hubble radius must have been much, much bigger, exponentially bigger than the final one. Okay, so now there's this beautiful picture, which again, so it's assuming that we have a closed universe, so but it's easy to draw it. So I return back to this analogy of visitor sphere. So we are somewhere here on the sphere. And so what I'm saying is that basically before the inflation started, you know, all these, so this is, well, we are situated at chi equal to zero. But anyway, so all this region here in the universe was actually causally connected before the inflation started. And then at the end of inflation, so as the inflation proceeds, the universe expands. But this Hubble radius, which is the distance from here to there, is actually shrinking. So at the end of inflation, the R final is somewhere here. Okay, so suddenly that actually space where you can communicate is much, much smaller because the universe expanded like crazy. Okay, and so now maybe we are here somewhere today. Today. And so now you see how this paradigm immediately, for example, solves the horizon problem. Okay. So the horizon problem is asking, in some sense, well, I'm observing something coming, a photon coming from that direction, and a photon coming from that direction, and you are asking why this region, you know, can be in thermal contact with that region, and the answer is, well, because they were in thermal contact long time ago, actually, before the inflation started. Okay. So, if our initial before the inflation started is bigger than R today, then solves three puzzles, which I'm going to mention now, but you already know one of them is the horizon problem, and is in some sense the most severe one. Solve three puzzles, and provide it. Okay, so you impose that Ri is bigger than R today, and you can resolve the three puzzles which I'm going to mention now, provided that really this number n is sufficiently large. And so n has to be something like 40 to 60 to resolve all the puzzles. So really, in order to resolve all the puzzles I'm going to mention now, you need at least this n. Okay, so now, as the paradigm of inflation, and as I say, it's just a framework. It's not one theory. It's many possible realizations of this framework here. So now, there is a serious problem to this idea. And the idea is, you know, why the inflation started. So the problem is why the inflation started and how it finished. And in some sense, what you have to do, especially, so okay, so nobody really cares how it started, but if you, you care how it ended, because you know that you have to finish this this period of exponential expansion of the universe, and actually outside of this, somehow the radiation universe has to be born, right? So, and you know that the radiation universe at the beginning is very, very hot, right? And then it starts, the temperature starts decaying according to this redshift factor or whatever. But so what, you, what actually has to happen is that at the end of inflation, at the end, well, so we have to sort of, you know, we have to exit inflation period. And start a hot radiation era. And so because you need, you know, a universe which is really, really hot and you know, filled with radiation and all the particles which we know, somehow have to transform. So for example, there's a model for inflation is that you have some scalar field driving that inflation. And so at the end of the inflation era, you have to actually turn this scalar field into the, all the particles of the standard model you know, and they all have to be relativistic and of very, very high temperature. And so this thing is called reheating. And there are some proposals how to do that, but it's not really, I don't think it's well established how actually you do this reheating precisely. So that's for example, a problem which you have with inflation is that you really, you have to start the universe as we know it at the end, and it's not so simple to do it. Okay? So that's what inflation is. So now let me mention those three puzzles. Those three puzzles. You already know one, which is the horizon problem. Well, actually, you know two. So horizon problem is one of them. And simplest way to understand it is if I have CMB here released, and this is my Big Bang, and this is us, you know that this guy couldn't communicate with that guy. However, if there is an inflation, so this is, this picture is true if you have decelerating universe. So this is for a double dot smaller than zero. But if you have an accelerating one preceding to this, so if you have a double dot now is bigger than zero somewhere here, then the origin of this coordinate eta, which was originally at equal to zero, actually shifts and can go all the way to minus infinity. So you actually buy more time. And you can, there's a plenty of time where the light cones of this guy with the light cone of that guy actually overlaps. And so there's plenty of time to communicate and so correlate physics here and correlate physics there. So if a double dot was bigger than zero. Okay, so that's the horizon problem. Or you can understand it in terms of this moving Hubble radius is really actually basically everything before communicated because it had time to communicate before moving Hubble radius shrank. Okay, so now it seems that the regions are disconnected because the Hubble radius shrank really, really too much. But originally, actually, it was much, much bigger, so they could communicate. So that's maybe a better picture to understand this thing. Okay. So now the second problem is the flatness problem. So why? So basically the question is why rho is equal to rho critical and then 1 plus minus 0.01, it seems like a very fine tuning. But, you know, it's not that much fine tuning today, it's just 1 plus 0.01. But actually if you go past in the early universe, then this had to be much more fine tuned to be to be equal to 1, as I'll show in a minute. So basically what you do is that you write down your Friedmann equation, 3m Planck square. By the way, I have been writing big M Planck square, capital M Planck square, and it was 1 over g Newton. So now I'm absorbing 8 pi in it, and to denote the difference, I'm just writing small m Planck square. Okay, so my small m Planck square is 1 over g Newton, but also 8 pi in it. Okay, so, okay, and then it's minus k over a square. So now introducing the critical density as for k equal to 0, as we did many times, you can rewrite this equation, which is in slightly different form to what I was writing it before. But okay, so rho over rho critical is 1 plus, so rho critical is just 8 square. In some sense, I'm dividing by 8 square. Okay, so if I'm dividing by 8 square, I have k over a square, 8 square, which is the commoving Hubble radius square. It's 1 plus k r hat square. Okay. So this is just a different form of this Friedmann equation, just using this r hat. Okay. So now, if universe is decelerating, if a double dot is smaller than 0 all the time, then you know that r hat is increasing. R hat is increasing. So actually, if you take the value of rho over rho critical now, well, r hat is pretty big. Okay? So, and that's pretty big means this 1 plus 0.01. This is a 0.01. But if you go back, you know, early time, that means that actually this r hat was much, much smaller. So it would have to be not 0.01, but much, much smaller than 0.01. So in early universe, r hat is small if the universe is decelerating. So that means actually there would be have to be a precise tuning. And for example, rho over rho critical at the time of Big Bang nucleosynthesis would actually have to be 1 plus minus 10 to minus 31. Okay? So this seems now as really pretty fine tuning to me. Okay? So it's really coming from the fact that r hat in the past was much smaller if there was only the deceleration of the universe. Okay? So this is really fine tuning. So now, of course, the solution offered by inflation is obvious from the picture again, is that you are saying, well, it may be so that really we had fine tuning at the beginning of the radiation era. But in fact, we know that r, before the inflation started, was much, much bigger. So actually, I could start with something which wasn't that fine tuned. And actually, it was much, much bigger than r today. So probably, you know, this wasn't 0.01, but maybe it was 0.1, or maybe it was 1, or whatever. Okay, so you know, from that picture, you can see how inflation resolves this puzzle. So inflation removes this fine tuning. Any questions to this, or everything is pretty clear? Everything is clear, right? Okay. So finally, there is a third problem which bothered people who like gut theories. So if you don't believe in gut theories, don't worry about this problem. Monopole problem. For friends of gut theories. if you don't believe in grand unified theories, don't worry at all. But if you do believe, then there is the following problem. So actually, in the early universe at the gut scale, and again, if there were no inflation, so at some point the hot universe had to be so hot that you were at the gut scale. Okay, and at the time, you have some various phase transitions predicted by these theories, or possible, admissible by these theories. And in principle, you could create some topological defects. You could create cosmic strings. You could create domain walls, and you could create monopoles as well, magnetic monopoles, if you want, or other monopoles. And so, you would basically create one monopole per one vacuum. And of course, vacuum means a causally connected region here. So it's precisely proportional to this Hubble horizon, the one volume, one horizon volume as given by our commoving horizon radius at the time. Okay, so you would have, you know, one region here which would be causally connected, and that would approximately correspond to one vacuum, and then you would have another region here which would be causally connected, and it would be another vacuum. And in principle, you could create approximately one monopole per each of these vacua. Okay? Very good. So now the distance between these monopoles, distance between the monopoles, the physical distance is, of course, given by A times the chi. But chi, for us, is really this commoving Hubble radius. And if you place this gut theory precisely at the time when the inflation ended, so this is given by R hat final, something like this. So this would be the distance between the monopoles. If they were created at the end of inflation, well, there's no inflation, but at the time when we start radiation era, or when we know that there is radiation era there. Okay? So now, again, using the Friedmann equation, you would have that h square is proportional to the density at that time. And the density, everything is relativistic, right? At gut scale, all the particles are relativistic. So it's just proportional to t to the 4. So you have t to the 4, and then g newton, which is m Planck square. Okay? So that's the Hubble expansion at the time, so hf, and tf, if you want, m Planck square. So in other words, I know that this d produced is 1 over hf. So I can calculate what this d produced is. So d produced, the distance when you produce these monopoles, is 1 over hf, which is proportional to m Planck divided by df square. And the assumption is that this happened at the gut scale. So this is m Planck over d gut square. Okay, so that's the assumption that really, you know, all this happened at gut scale, or temperatures at the gut scale. Okay, so since then, you know, we just have normal expansion of the universe, everything is cooling down, so we can actually calculate what is the distance between these monopoles now. Okay, and that's, of course, even just by the redshift factor, Thompson. So d now is just given by the ratio of the temperatures of gut and the ratio of today and d produced. Okay, so this is just a redshift thing here. Oh, very good. So now d produced is that thing here. So this is m Planck divided by d gut and t CMB So one of the TGATs actually got penciled, and so TGAT TSEMB. And if you plug in, so TGAT is something like 10 to 19 GeV, I think. 10 to 16 GeV. So that's usually where people put gut scale. So now this is 10 to the 4 kilometers. So in other words, you are saying that if there were no inflation whatsoever, and you believe in guts, and you believe that that per vacuum I created one monopole, so now the distance between these monopoles could be something like 10,000 kilometers at this point. Okay, so now that's pretty close. So you should basically be encountering monopole everywhere, which is not so. Luckily, so then the density of monopoles is just, well, the mass of the monopole, which is like mgat, divided by d3 now. And if you calculate that, you find that actually just the density, the mass contributing to the critical density, well, the monopoles would be contributing to the energy density by 10 to the 17 times rho critical. Okay, so which is of course a disaster, because if we had, you know, so much energy density, then universe would collapse. Long time ago. And you know, of course, these people were worried about it. Yeah?
Why the mass of the monopole mgat?
Oh, I'm just placing the, yeah. It's of the order, right? This is an order estimate. What else it would be?
No, I was just thinking that why does you have to be related? Like massive other parts.
Well, why it wouldn't be, right? It is. They don't, or they do?
Do they?
No.
Do the W and Z bosons, like, have the same mass as the electro weak scale, right?
Yeah,
I think, you know, there's no. It's the order estimate. I'm not saying it's exactly that, but you know. But of course, you have some pretty good reserve here. You have 10 to the 17 reserve. So you would have to somehow say that the M of the monopole is 10 to the 17 times more than MGAT, and you would have to explain why it is so. Right, in some sense. So I think this is a pretty reasonable estimate. Why not, right?
I mean, the monopole is not a like a force carrier, right? It's just a particle.
But then if it's like constant, you would have to explain why you don't observe it instead of it.
So anyway, so this is the standard calculation people present here. And, you know, people were worried, right? So if, you know, everybody was excited about gut theories and 70s or whatever. This is a serious problem. So now, of course, again, the inflation offers a very simple explanation. Well, in fact, we know that when this, you know, the creation, hypothetical creation of monopoles happened, actually, this was not our final, but was our initial, which is much, much, much bigger. So actually, the distance between the monopoles, if you created them anyway, wouldn't be that small thing over there, but it would be a much bigger part of the universe. And so the monopoles would be much, much further away than you expect by this calculation. Exponentially far away, further away than you expect by this calculation. OK, so again, the inflation solves this problem if you believe in this problem.
So then we're saying that the gut scale was at the beginning of inflation, and then the reheating.
Well, so here I'm saying there is no inflation, right? So this calculation assumes no inflation.
But if you want to solve the inflation, you would have to say that the guts.
So here, really, if I believe in inflation, so what you are plugging here is the radius when the inflation finished, right? When in your universe started as you know it. Right, and so only after that you can actually assume that this is true, that it's resisting the right way, and so on. right? But it, yeah. So this is assuming there was no inflation, basically. It just started this hot Big Bang as we know it. Okay, so these are the three problems, and as a motivation to study inflation, if you want. In some sense, I would say that the horizon problem is the most serious one, and the other ones are just, you know, basically the same thing, but in a different address. So really all you need is shrink your moving Hubble radius, and then you explain everything. You explain one, then you explain everything, in some sense. Okay? But let me also stress that maybe, you know, the worry about the fine-tuning there is maybe not justified, because there are alternatives how really you can create a universe which is perfectly fine-tuned, and you don't need inflation. And so one of them is, for example, Hartle-Hawking proposal for the origin of the universe, and then you create the universe with all initial conditions the same. So read that proposal. It's a very nice paper, probably undersided. It has only several thousand sites now, but it's an alternative to inflation in some sense. Okay. Okay, so now a technical thing is that, let me just put quantitative bounds on when the inflation can be successful. Yes?
I got a little lost in the last part. So how did inflation solve this problem of the model?
Oh, so because if the inflation, you know, preceded the radiation era as you know it, and then hopefully actually it was like technically what you have to do is you just have to replace RF is R initial, right? So if you say, well, the gut scale actually happened, you know, before the inflation started in some sense, then what you have to do is that you have to replace this final R hat, this R initial, which was, of course, much, much bigger. So now, you know, you have vacuum in the whole region, not only in this tiny region, but you have one vacuum in this big region. So you have many less vacuum. And correspondingly, you create many less monopoles. Yeah. Okay, so the conditions for inflation to be successful So the first one is very intuitively obvious. You need rapidly shrinking Hubble sphere, Hubble radius. Okay, so I definitely need that. And so you have dr hat over dt. So now I know people won't be happy about it anyway. So if you calculate, so R hat is 1 over AH. And you can write it in terms of differentiating A and differentiating H. Okay, and so what you get is this thing here, A dot H. That will differentiate 1 over X in public. So I just write the result. And that's that. And then A square. And then this splits into two terms, so you can put minus 1 over a in front of this thing, and then you will have h dot over h square, and then you will have something else here. Where I defined a parameter epsilon to be precisely this h dot over h squared. Okay, So this is just plugging what R hat is, and then defining epsilon as H dot over H square minus, and then you are getting that thing, and probably sign is wrong, but maybe not, minus 1 over A. No, it's probably right. Okay. So now you want this thing to be really, really small. So you want that to be really, really small than 0. And so people usually solve that by saying, well, this epsilon has to be really, really small. So it must be much smaller than 1 so that I maximize this thing here. So the requirement is that this thing is actually much, much smaller than 1 so that I maximize the minus thing over there. OK, so that's really, yeah. So that's a rapidly shrinking Hubble radius condition in some sense. Of course, epsilon must be, yeah, so you want this to be negative. So epsilon cannot be, you know. Yeah. OK, so that's the first condition. And the second condition, which is actually less trivial, is that the inflation has to last sufficiently long. So has to last sufficiently long and this translates into the requirement that the fractional change of epsilon per Hubble time is small. So what do I mean by that? So you define a new parameter eta, and then you have, this is my fractional change of epsilon, so epsilon dot divided by epsilon. And then you measure that in terms of the Hubble time, if you want. And so this must be small. So you require that the epsilon value of this is, again, much smaller than 1. And so these are the two conditions for inflation to be successful. But first, you really have to be, you know, exponentially decreasing your Hubble radius, and it's captured by that condition. And this has to last for a long time. It has to last for 40 or 260 e-folds. And so it has to last long. So I cannot change epsilon drastically, because if I change epsilon drastically, I will at some point violate the first condition in some sense. So let me conclude the discussion for today by observing, you know, what kind of matter I need to have to drive inflation. What are the conditions which will satisfy, you know, these requirements? Yes?
The epsilon, do we need it much smaller than 1 or much smaller than 0? Very negative, not very close to 0, right?
Well, if I make it very negative, then this will be much smaller than 0. Yes.
OK, so that's what that means, very negative.
OK, so what type of matter drives inflation? And for that, you can use your, so basically, when I told you there are two Friedmann equations describing your FRW spacetime, I actually lied to you in some sense. I wrote two of them, but they both contain only first time derivatives. But you know that the Einstein equations are actually second order equations. So in some sense, you should be getting two time derivatives. So actually, the two Friedmann equations are sort of like an integrated version of Einstein equations. And so now we have to actually write down the original equation with two derivatives by playing with this equation. So you have one Friedmann equation is this thing, rho over 3 m Planck square, and the other one is rho dot equal to minus 3h rho plus p. Okay? So now, of course, you can really recover the true Einstein equation by playing with these equations, namely by differentiating one of them. And so if I differentiate the first one, you are getting 2h h dot. And again, you can write it, writing this what h is. So h is a dot over a. So then you have to differentiate it once more, and you are getting something like a double dot over a minus a dot square over a square, which is 2h, and then a double dot over a. So this guy is h square. And so for h square, I use again the first equation. So I'll have plus, oh, and there's a minus. So minus rho over 3 m Planck square. OK, so this is just differentiating the definition of h and then using the first Friedmann equation. But of course, I can equally, so this is the left-hand side if I differentiate, but the right-hand side is just rho dot over 3 m Planck square. And for rho dot, I can use again the second equation. So then you have is equal to minus 3h and then rho plus p divided by 3 m Planck square on the right-hand side. Okay, so now you compare whatever you see here is whatever you see there. And you conclude from here is that, and then you, it's just one step missing, but anyway. So what you conclude is that a double dot over a is just given by minus 6 m Planck square rho plus 3p. Okay? So this is the true Einstein equation which you actually get from the FRW spacetime. It's called acceleration equation. And you can see that really the Friedmann equations have sort of an integrated version of this accelerated equation. Okay. So now what we require for inflation is that a double dot, that the universe is accelerating, so a double dot is actually bigger than zero. So inflation requires a double dot bigger than zero, which means that rho plus 3p is smaller than zero. Or if I use this W parameter, rho p over rho is my W. So this is equivalent to saying that W is my equation of state. The parameter W for that must be smaller than 1/3, minus 1/3. Okay. Okay. So this type of matter you have to have. You have to have a matter which has equation of state with W smaller than minus 1 over 3. So that's what you have to have. So I just warn you here is that this cannot be normal matter as you know it, because such equation of state violates strong energy condition. Strong energy condition in general relativity. So now energy conditions, in some sense, are requirements on what normal matter means. And so there's many of them. There's weak energy condition, strong energy condition, dominant energy condition, and so on. But all of them sort of express like basic requirements for the matter should satisfy. So for example, it shouldn't propagate faster than speed of light. Or the energy density of the matter should be positive, and stuff like that. Okay, so one of these conditions is called strong energy condition, and in invariant way it says RAB dA dB is greater or equal to zero for any time like t. And of course this translates through the Einstein equations on the requirement for the energy momentum tensor. Okay, so now we can easily check that matter with this W, with this equation of state, at least in the form, let's say, of perfect fluid or whatever, it violates such a basic requirement. So if inflation actually is, you know, driven by some kind of matter, this matter is not normal matter. It must be something very weird. And so let me stop here and let me continue tomorrow. Questions?
What is TA?
What is what?
TA.
Oh, TA is any time-like killing, time-like vector.
Time-like.
Do we want to run into problems with causality if we violate the strong energy condition?
I think, yeah, you run into many problems. I'm not sure if strong energy condition is exactly the causality thing, but it may be. I don't remember. It's possible. But, you know, there are various conditions, so one of them, actually, this one, is violated. Yeah. But in some sense, this is not a disaster because, you know, the energy conditions are just, you know, natural requirements for the matter to satisfy. But it doesn't mean that every matter will satisfy them. And in fact, you know, if it's really a condition on matter, it should come out from some theory of matter. So, for example, from quantum field theory. So now if you open Weinberg, there is nothing about energy conditions, right? So it doesn't seem that actually this energy condition would follow from the property of QFT or from some other property. So it's something which people require because they think this is how normal matter should behave, but you know, it's not justified in some sense. And you can have you can violate them quantum mechanically, and you can have some weird. And so I'm just warning you here. I'm just saying, you know, something a classical relativist would like to have is that the energy conditions are satisfied. They won't be if you want to have inflation. Okay, so